Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports.
Your sports update from One Bills Drive. The Bills kick off the 2020 season with a 27-17 win over the Jets. Josh Allen impresses in the win, throwing for over 300 yards for the first time in his career. The win did, however, come with some injuries on the defensive side of the ball. Both linebackers Matt Milano and Tremaine Edmonds left the game and did not return. Milano sustained a hamstring injury, while Edmonds suffered a shoulder injury. We should get an update when head coach Sean McDermott speaks to the media later this afternoon. New York Jets coach Adam Gase, who was involved in an injury dispute with Le'Veon Bell in training camp, openly second-guessed himself after the game Sunday for leaving the running back in the game after he injured his hamstring. Quote, "I'm mad at myself that I let him go back in there in the second half," Gase said after the Jets' 10-point loss on Sunday to the Bills. Around the AFC East, the Cam Newton era in New England officially underway as his two rushing touchdowns led them to a 21-11 win over the Dolphins. Ryan Fitzpatrick had three interceptions in the game. It will bear watching this week to see where the Dolphins go at quarterback when they host the Bills next Sunday. The Tom Brady era in Tampa didn't go as expected. Brady threw two picks, including a pick six to Janoris Jenkins as the Saints dropped the Bucs 34-23. Brady now 14-4 in season openers, one of those four losses, of course, coming to the Bills in their 2003 31-0 shutout win here in Orchard Park. Having traveled the long road of recovery from a 2019 season-ending neck injury, Dallas Cowboys linebacker Leighton Vander Esch found more bad fortune on Sunday night. He suffered a broken collarbone and is headed to injured reserve after suffering the injury in the first half of Dallas's Sunday night loss to the Rams. Vander Esch should be back this season, but it's a blow for that Cowboys front seven. Finally on the ice, the Stars can advance to the Stanley Cup Finals with a win tonight over the Golden Knights. Dallas currently leads that series 3-1. Face-off tonight at 8 o'clock. That is your sports update here from One Bills Drive. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Hour number two of a Bills Victory Monday program here as we're broadcasting live from the Seneca Studios in Orchard Park. And it's time now to go around the locker room presented by Connect Life, your blood and organ donor network. And we begin with one Josh Allen, who commented on the team's offensive production Sunday against the Jets.
Yeah, I mean, I think our first five drives, we didn't punt. We had opportunities to score, and you know, those two turnovers by me, I can't have those. But we were moving the ball how we wanted to. Our guys were getting open. We understand the guys that we have are tough for defenses to cover, you know, for a long period of time. And when I'm able to escape the pocket, and our guys did a great job today of scramble rules and getting open and making some plays in the end zone. You saw Zach Moss, a rookie, find a lane, and I was fortunate to put it on him. He made the catch, and it's what you love to see. You know, those live reps that you don't really get in practice, but you know, when you're in the game, you have good communication like we have, like we've had. That's the results you're going to see.
Pretty impressive performance by the receivers, along with Josh, when it came to making plays off script, Steve.
Yeah, and it's when you're going off script, everybody's got to have the same feel, and that's one of the reasons continuity is such a big thing. When you've done it so many times before and you talk about what happens when Josh does go right or Josh does go left, what he's thinking, what is going to make him tuck the ball and run, what's going to make him look for more receivers, and understanding what he wants when he does look downfield. All of that stuff is in the mix when the play breaks down. And if everybody knows all of those things, they all still work together even though nothing's rehearsed.
Josh commented on that very receiver group after seeing them in action with real bullets flying. Here's what he had to say about his receiving core.
Well, one, they're extremely smart football players. They know how to get open. They're just fun to play with. They communicate, they talk, and the things that they can do, you know, not a lot of guys in this league can do what they can do. They're constantly getting open. They're making plays. You know, you saw some run after the catch today. I threw Steph one ball at 2 yards. He made two guys miss and ended up getting 8 or 9. That's what you love to see, you know, with your 1 and 2 receivers. And, I really wouldn't say we got a 1 and a 2. I think we got 2 ones. You know, John Brown consistently played well last year. And I don't expect anything less this year. You saw what he did today. And then, third down and opportunities for Cole, you know, making guys miss when he's got a good matchup. So it's something that we're still going to work on. And I expect things to continue to get better between us, the communication, the familiarity. And I'm super excited for what we got.
Somebody was not muted there on that Zoom call. There was a lot going on in the press box with all the media, and somebody didn't get muted after their question, which made it kind of hard to hear Josh there at the end. But it's clear that he is as giddy as he's ever been about the weapons he has at his disposal now.
Yeah. Well, it's tough not to be excited as a player when you have a game like that yesterday. Certainly, you go into the game, and everybody did this. I did not expect the Jets to fall over. I thought they would be a good football team. They're an NFL team, and they're going to play a lot of games. They're going to win a couple of – I don't know how many games they're going to win some games. They're not
maybe
gonna go,
four.
They're not going to go over.
They're not going to be good.
They're not going to be good, but you didn't know what to expect. So you go in there thinking, you know, we're going to have to play well, and they did. They played well. They didn't play their best, and they won. And that says a lot about maybe where their top end is. It works out really – when you're looking for things to motivate you, the players will always be motivated by what they haven't done well and what they need to work on. Certainly plenty of it to go around in this game. But as a group – They completely dominated this game, particularly that first half. It was not even close.
It was a clinic.
It was not even
close. I mean,
close.
Josh Allen was 16 of his first 20. I tweeted it yesterday when it was happening. It was pitch and catch. I mean, it was way too easy. Yeah. I mean, guys were – I mean, yes, as Josh mentioned, there were some instances where he would throw a short pass and then that receiver would make somebody miss and then get, you know, 7-8 yards after the catch, move the sticks, fresh set of downs. But there were also times where guys were running completely wide open with nobody near them. I mean, you had photographers in row one that were closer to some of the Bills receivers than any of the defenders that the Jets were putting out on the field. It was unbelievable. And I was looking at some of the tweets that the Jets reporters were making back in New York or New Jersey or wherever they were, and they're like, this is ugly with a capital U. I mean, it was bad. I mean, the Jets just looked flat, not in sync at all. And then they suffered injuries at linebacker, where they already had 2 injuries. You had Patrick Owosso, who was put on IR before week one. Then you had Avery Williamson declared out on Friday. You were down to Neville Hewitt and the other guy whose name's going to escape me. And he had to leave the game with an injury, Blake Cashman, early right, in the game, and they had to put Harvey Lange in. That was the last inside linebacker they had on the bench. They didn't have anybody else left. They had 2 inside linebackers healthy by the end of the game.
We haven't talked about that enough. I mean, around the league, and I mean, I watched football all day yesterday. I watched the entire Dallas game last night. I'm paying the price today.
But you're hanging a little bit.
Injuries, soft tissue injuries are rampant. Everybody's got them. They're all nagging hammies. They're
well,
quad
and with
injuries,
no preseason, Steve, the ramp up is too extreme going from training camp practice to games, right? Regular
they suspected
season?
This might happen. It happened in 2011 in the lockout, and everybody said, well, but you thought the ramp up would do it. It didn't work. I mean, it didn't work. There's hamstrings all over the league, and the Bills are no exception, and the Jets are no exception. Everybody's got some issues with soft tissue. So
that rhymes.
Right.
Well done, Steve.
I'm brilliant.
Sometimes
and
you
I
are.
I think that's going to be something to watch going forward. I don't know what the sports science people are going to have to do about it. Now, the Bills had a little bit of run of this last year. You know, Devin Singletary had it happen to him.
Yeah, early.
There was maybe 1 or 2 other guys that had this happen to him last year.
Milano missed a game.
Right.
With a hamstring, I believe it was.
So he's got a little bit of a history with it. But it's something that they go through every year. When the intensity goes all the way up and the regular season starts.
Yeah, you're turning it up to 11.
Yeah, I mean, guys you can't be ready for it physically. It's about hydration. It's about warming up right. It's about being ready for it. And it's not something you can feel beforehand.
And it's also about playing relatively close to that regular season level for four preseason games. Even if you're just getting a few series, you're just conditioning your body to the speed and intensity that's going to be required of you in the regular season. It's not the same in a preseason game, but a preseason game is dialed up higher than anything you can replicate in a camp setting, right?
I'm thinking back to my mindset, and I think what it does is this. Certainly, you go hard in a preseason game, and what it does is, and I'm going back, you know, a couple of decades now, and I kind of get my mind around it. It's the first time you think, okay, wait a minute now. If this is going to be the way it is, you kind of remind yourself every year. If this is going to be the way it is, I got to get rusty or I got to get stretched better to begin the game with.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm glad I'm not playing the whole half tonight, or I'm glad I'm not playing the whole game tonight because I really need to get it together. I can feel it. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So you kind of do that in the preseason. That gives you a chance to mentally say, I got to do something so that I don't blow my leg muscles out on the first time I cover a kick,
yeah,
you know, or punt.
Stephon Diggs set a mark in the opener yesterday with his highest reception total of his career in an opener with 8, and he was targeted 9 times. That's a hell of a catch percentage. And he talked about what he thought of Josh Allen seeing him up close and personal in a game for the first time.
It's exciting. He's still got a little bit of kid in him, so when he's out there having fun. And I enjoy it, you know. I'm always in his ear trying to, like, keep that positive energy going just because I can't imagine how hard it is to play quarterback. But when I see him out there having a good time, it gives me a little bit pushing it back, a little bit motivation to say, you want to play for this guy. You want to go hard for this guy because he's damn sure going hard for you.
He's going to go hard for you. I don't think there's any question about that. Diggs also commented on John Brown, a guy who made a whole lot of plays on Sunday at the expense of Diggs to a certain extent because Diggs was getting all the early attention, rolled coverage, whatever the case might be. And so Josh very astutely went to the guys that were open, which more often than not in the early going was John Brown. So here was Diggs' take on John Brown's abilities as a receiver.
I think, in my opinion, John Brown is one of the most underrated receivers in the NFL. He's underappreciated as well. He does a lot of things extremely well. He plays on the outside, can't play on the inside. He has great hands, great routes. And it's just like, it's fun to play with guys like that. Because, you know, it's hard to double. It's hard to do all that. And it gives the ability there for everybody to eat, everybody to win on the outside. And we got some guys on the inside that play extremely well. Gabe Davis, young guy, stepped up. He made a lot of crucial plays for us. He's blocking as well. So he's doing a lot. And having everybody coming along, I would just say, it's good for our offense. It's healthy for our offense. And John Brown's a ball.
Tell me, Steve, if this is the vibe you're getting, because this is the vibe I'm getting from Stephon Diggs. I think Stephon Diggs heard all this great stuff in camp, kind of liked what he was seeing, hearing the camaraderie of the roster. It all sounded and looked really good, but he wasn't sold yet. And now this game happens. He's getting doubled early, and Josh is finding answers elsewhere on the field, and then he eventually comes back to Stephon. He finishes the game with 8 receptions and a convincing victory. I think Stephon is sold.
Yeah, and we noticed this from the radio booth yesterday when we were there at the stadium and watching it. The thing that there was no crowd noise, none of that. And you could hear a lot more of what was going on, particularly with the ambient mics that we always have on the broadcast. That really are kind of drowned out most of the time by the crowd. The Bills sideline was really enthusiastic. They were really upbeat and energetic. They were really encouraging to the guys on the field. It was an atmosphere on the Bills sideline that just oozed culture and camaraderie and teamwork. Now, certainly things were going their way, and that helps with that, no question about it. But it wasn't manufactured. It was genuine. And when the ebb and flow of the game, I think that energy and that camaraderie really carried these guys through. And I think for a lot of these new players, it's not always that way at other places.
Yeah.
And I think the genuine nature of it is kind of striking to them.
I think it's infectious at the same time. Yeah. No, it's genuine. It's unquestionably genuine. I think the other part of that, too, is you better believe that Coach McDermott before that game said, hey, we don't have any fans. We got to generate our own energy here. for our teammates. So if you're on that sideline, we better hear you. You know, pump these guys up out there. You are the fans when you're not in the game today.
Right.
Essentially, that's what you are.
I said it on the broadcast yesterday, and I kind of mentioned it. Murphy goes, I don't know. You might not want to do it. I said, listen, they miss the fans. Those players missed it.
They were tweeting about it after the game.
I wish they would have been there. The players would have. It was not the same. It wasn't as good, obviously, without the fans there.
Very sterile.
I said it on the broadcast. Today, that team didn't need them.
Right.
They didn't need him yesterday.
Yeah, they were that much better than the Jets.
Team yesterday. That first half was as a resounding as a defeat and in total control on both sides of the football as you'll ever have used. If this ever happened in that stadium. And certainly the scoreboard didn't get out of hand real quick. But I'm telling you this, that team was in total control. And so the effect that the fans would have had, they would have been there to enjoy it. But I don't think they could have enhanced it in any way, shape, or form.
Mitch Morse has spoke glowingly of the strides that Josh Allen has made with his game leading up to the start of his third NFL season. And Josh made him look awfully good. Set a career high for completions, completion percentage, and his first 300-yard passing day. Threw for two touchdowns, ran for another. Mitch Morse on Josh Allen's ultra-productive day.
Proud of Josh. I mean, his composure after – you know, making a mistake here or there. It was great. And it was, you know, maturity at the utmost level and, something that we love to see and, we could build on. Josh helps this offensive lineman out a lot, gets us out of, some sticky situations. A guy who can make a play on his feet is always something challenging for a defense. We don't want him to rely on that too much. But he, you know, it really is nice to have a mobile quarterback that can get you out of some stuff, even if he knows that the offensive line kind of screwed up once or twice, so he can get us on the move. And sometimes he just played smart. I mean, those fumbles aside, I thought he played great, smart football. And it was great. It was fantastic to see. And I know he feels like he's got a lot to work on, but we all do.
Yeah, I mean, he was very – apologetic of the fumbles right after the game in his post-game press conference. I can't do that. You know, I know I can't lose the ball there. We're going to be in tighter games than the one we were in today, and that could be more costly. And he's right. It is. My concern going forward with that is teams are going to see that on film, and they're going to be looking even more so to punch it out from him, knowing that he's got a history of fumbling the ball. I mean, let's be honest. I think that opponents see that and they say, oh, all right, if he's going to take off and run, I mean, you might see some teams be less apt to go for the tackle and just try to punch it out first instead of trying to bring a 245-pound quarterback to the ground. And the second one was different. You know, he's you know, head over heels, and he said, what I should have done there is protect the ball rather than worrying about cushioning my fall. He said, that's the error I made on that play. The other one's just a straight strip. He thought he was in clean and never saw the guy coming from the backside and got hit, and the guy punched it out. Future opponents are going to be after that ball when he's out there on the edge.
They'll actually be practicing. They'll talk about it all week in practice. They'll work on it. It'll be a point of emphasis for their coaching staff, and it's not going to get easier for Josh Allen not to fumble. It's going to get more difficult.
Yeah.
That's just the simple fact of the matter.
245 total yards of offense for the Jets yesterday. That's an anemic figure. The defense hasn't gotten a lot of pub today, and we understand why, but they had a heck of an effort yesterday. And Coach McDermott commented on the defensive line rotation, which was exhibited with wholesale changes. When the starting four comes on, a whole new four came out on the second series, and then that continued for large stretches of the game yesterday. So I actually asked Coach McDermott, you know, for his take on why the defensive line rotation was the way it was.
I thought, you know, this, just philosophically, that's a little bit of what we believe in there, Chris. And it's probably a combination of that, honestly, and also just, you know, some of the three and outs combined with the offense staying on the field, our offense staying on the field with multiple play drives. And then there are no huddle at times, too. So it was probably a combination of all of that, really.
Yeah. It's a lot of thought goes into that. It's not just saying, okay, you guys, it's your turn. You get three and out. You get three and out.
Yeah.
It's like
for the first five drives.
Right. Nobody's
but
playing.
I found it interesting. Second, I mean, because this is why I found it interesting. First team D line goes out there, three and out, they come off the field. The next time on the field, they have four new guys. Those other guys just played three plays. I mean, do you need to rotate?
Right.
They felt that they should. They wanted to get those guys into the feel of the game, I guess, to a certain extent. But we're talking about Daryl Johnson, a second-year player, going in at left defensive end, second series of the game. And next to him, Justin Zimmer, a former undrafted rookie who just joined this team 3 weeks ago. And he's out there for the second series of the game.
Along with Harrison Phillips and Mario Addison.
Yeah. And then later on, there were some different mix-match type combos where you had Addison and Hughes on the field at the same time as bookends. And Quentin Jefferson and Ed Oliver were the predominant defensive tackle combo with the first unit. But I just found that very interesting that they just brought in a whole new four.
And then Vernon Butler had a pulled hamstring.
He didn't even play.
So it's going to be interesting to see how they handle his rotation once he's back and healthy and who will sit down, if anybody.
Yeah. Coach McDermott also addressed the injuries to Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano, though he didn't give too many details on the nature or severity of those injuries. He addressed where they would have to go in the event that the two of them can't suit up on Sunday in Miami.
Those guys are good football players, and they're good football players for us. They've done a nice job, and thought they were doing some good things today. And I was very proud of the way that the younger guys stepped in and did a good job. From Tyrell Dodson to AJ Klein to Tyler Matakevich. And so that's the next man up, and that's the resiliency of the linebacking crew and the resiliency of our defense and of our team. And so there's going to be adversity like there was today, whether it was injuries or a change in momentum. And I think we've learned that you've got to continue to push through, and I thought our team did that today. So we'll see what happens this week. We hope and pray we get them back. If we don't, then it'll be next man up.
Next man up is the way he always likes to put it. Don't make too much of an injury. Don't make too light of an injury. But hopefully the severity of those two are minimal or minor in nature. And, those guys can get treatment this week and be good to go on Sunday. The other thing to consider here in terms of a factor, especially with a soft tissue injury like Milano's dealing with, is the heat that's going to exist in Miami. That's going to sap a player of their hydration levels much faster than a game up here in 60 degrees. So that's going to be something also to keep an eye on. But Coach McDermott will be addressing the media around 4 p.m. this afternoon, and we'll be bringing details to you on that on BuffaloBills.com. So stay close to that for updates on Matt Milano and Tremaine Edmonds, two players who left the game early yesterday. Joe in Rochester. Who else do we got? Bill in Cattaraugus. Matt in Williamsville, hang tight. We will get to you in the next segment. Got to step aside here, but be back with more here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you as we begin the second half of the program here. And we do want to get back to the phone calls at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. But we also want to bring your attention to Predict the Bills. The Buffalo Bills have announced the launch of Predict the Bills, a free mobile game presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Fans who download the Bills mobile app presented by M&T Bank will have the opportunity each week to predict the answers to a variety of game day related questions for a chance to win autographed gear and exclusive experiences. So make sure you check that out. Predict the Bills. Okay, we got to get you your phone calls, 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 on this Bills Victory Monday. And waiting patiently is Joe in Rochester. And Joe's got some comments on Brian Daboll's game plan yesterday. Joe, what do you have for us?
Hey, guys. Don't get me wrong. I like Brian Daboll a lot. I like his game plans. I like, you know, he's very creative and all that. I just am worried. It would seems to be like he seems to have a lot of lapses of common sense. Like, at the end of the first half, we're up 21 to nothing. We're inside the, like, 15 or whatever, and it's under a minute something left. And instead of just using running backs to run the ball and let them use their timeouts, take the half down, even if you kick a field goal, it's 24 to nothing. I mean, there's the time to be safe. You're up 21 nothing at that point. You go into the half 24 nothing. It's a big difference than giving them the ball, letting them get a spark, to see we can move the ball, and it's 21-3, and that's why it ended up being only, I mean, the game should have been like 40-0. You know what I mean? It ended up being a 10-point game.
So what do you think he lapsed common sense?
Well,
in?
That's when Josh had the fumble, right? He called the run by Josh, and he had the upended fumble down there.
The guy that, instead of running with the quarterback, you know what I mean? Why even risk getting him hurt? And he's known to fumble. I mean, he fumbles almost once in every 10 carries. Just be safe there. Run the ball out. Take the end of the half. Get the points, and you're up 24-0. It seems like sometimes he forgets to use the running backs for long periods of time. At the end of the playoff game in overtime, he didn't use the running backs at all, and we were running good that game. So he just seems to have these lapses where he just doesn't want to use the running backs.
So it sounds like your criticism, Joe, is more about recognition of time and score.
Yes.
And play calling therein. Am I right about that?
That's my only problem. I love what he's doing. I mean, our offense looks really good. But, yes, he needs to be more aware of the situations, the time, what he can do with the time, what can happen if you decide to pass or run with the quarterback. He doesn't seem to take those things into account.
Here's the thing, Joe. This
I understand it's working. You know what I mean?
I get it. Yeah, I get it. My point is this, and I agree with you, and it's easy enough to sit here on a Monday but I will rarely, and I don't think it's fair, to hold the obvious mistakes that a player makes on the field against the offensive coordinator. The safest play in the world to run, the most conservative play in the world to run, is to give the ball to one guy. He doesn't hand it to anybody else. He just takes it and runs. That's the safest, most conservative play in the world, and that's what they were doing. And then you got the guy that just, you know, Josh, he just laid it on he just let go of it. It's hard to blame Brian Daboll for running the safest play in the playbook.
I think the safest play in the playbook would be a run with Moss or Singletary, don't you?
Well, no, because you have to hand it ball from one guy to two guys. You know, I mean, you hand it to Josh once, you snap, hand off, that kind of thing. And I get it. They do it all the time. But and you can say what you want about Josh fumbling all the time. That's Josh. That's not Brian Daboll. And Brian Daboll has to trust. And I trust him, too. I trust Josh, too. But it's hard. I don't think it's I think you got the wrong look at it if you're trying to blame that scenario on Brian Daboll when it was an obvious mistake by a player.
I get that. I'm just saying he seems to have lapses of not using them when he should certain game situations. That's all.
Yeah. All right, Joe. I appreciate the take.
I get you. I mean, you can make that argument about everybody.
You can slice it a million ways.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, you can slice it a million ways. The thing that I often do when I see these situations that may or may and fans, I understand, it's going to frustrate them when something is run and it doesn't work. But I think you have to ask yourself, beyond the recognition of time and score, is what happened on the field a result of a lack of execution, a mistake by players, or is it just something that should not have been called at that particular time? more often than not, in the 3 years that Brian Daboll has been here, it's fallen on the side of lack of execution. And the Houston playoff game is a perfect example of that. There were plays to be made in that game that were not made due to lack of execution, nothing else. Period. It's always easy to point fingers at the coordinator. And in the vast majority of cases, it's an execution issue, not a play calling issue.
Absolutely. And I'll give you the example, and not for these two teams, this team, offensively and defensively, I love the way they're coordinated.
Yeah.
I love the way Daboll runs his offense, and what's there not to love about what Leslie Frazier has done with the defense? But I'll go back to the Houston game again, and I've said this before on the show, and people get tired of hearing it. Think about what it's like to be a coordinator in the National Football League. You're in a playoff game. You've done a great job all year. You've got a top three defense. Leslie Frazier calls the defense. You're in overtime in the playoffs in the National Football League. It doesn't get any more pressure-packed than that. He calls a defense, and he's exactly right. He has two free rushers on the quarterback, untouched, right in the lap of the quarterback. The quarterback tucks. It's done. The play's going to be over.
One guy rolls off him.
And they both miss the tackle. They knock each other off. One guy rolls. One guy misses. They close their – whatever happens, the quarterback does not go down. He rolls out, throws a little outlet pass to a running back. Game's over. Next play's a field goal. You lose.
That's execution.
And you'll have people saying, you know, what's the defensive coordinator doing?
Why are you blitzing that guy?
Whatever. And that's the same thing that Joe is talking about here. Down and distance, you just want to go 24-0, take it. That's awesome. We'll take that deal right now. Let's just snap it to the guy, let him just tuck it up and run it for a few yards. We'll just let the clock keep running and do all that. And your quarterback just – he drops it on the ground. That's not the coordinator.
No.
You know,
it's about execution.
And I
or
get
lack
it too.
Thereof.
There's nothing to, and I get it. It would if you do something and something bad happens, you should have done the other thing. I get it. It's easy to say, why didn't you hand it to Zach Moss? Why didn't you hand it to Devin Singletary? Well, that's fine. But that's more risky.
You're not calling that play expecting Josh Allen to fumble the football.
You're not. All right, of course.
So when it happens, it's a surprise to everybody.
And I get that's
it. Is it possible?
To me,
sure. Disaster is possible on every play you call.
To me, that says he knew exactly what the down and distance and the clock were. He was running the ball off tackle with a quarterback.
Run the clock down. You're in scoring territory.
Not maybe even getting it onto the other hash, for crying out loud. Who knows? All I'm saying is don't transpose the mistakes of the players and their execution into what was called and why it was called. Yeah. So that's all I'm saying. And Joe, and I get Joe's too. It's easy to, particularly on offensive coordinator, to throw darts at him because, like I said, it's easy. If it doesn't work, you should have done the other thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I get it.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 to get on board. Let's go to Bill in Cattaraugus. Bill's got another comment on Josh and some of his ball security. So, Bill, what do you got for us?
Well, it's not so much a comment or criticism. It's what can the coaches do to help him secure the ball better? Is there any, Steve, you would know this, any, special drills or anything?
Yeah, you got carried high, right? I mean, tuck
it
high.
Yeah, you show it to him on film. You tell him what he should have been doing, how he should have been holding the football. You can talk to him about what he should have been doing, how he's doing. Show him what he's supposed to be doing. Work on it in practice. Talk to him about it in the game. Make sure you alert him.
Five points of pressure.
When you've got a quarterback run coming up and you're about to call it, you say, Josh, remember now, protect the ball when you're running. Every time, you know, when Daboll calls the play, say, don't fumble this. You know, you give him a heads up. Say, listen, ball security is number one. Give him the heads up when you do it. So all of those things are possible. And unfortunately, they probably do all of those things already.
Oh, yeah.
So
They pound the fundamentals on these players. I will say this.
But
Josh,
you're right. He's got to continue to work on it. They got to make it a point of emphasis for him.
Josh did have an interesting comment after the game yesterday regarding his fumbles. He didn't use this as an excuse, but he did point out, it's been 7 months since I've been hit like that. And I think it is an adjustment to a certain extent, but he does have to be better, and I think he knows that. So I think
maybe he should take a slide or – get more out of bounds.
Yeah, here's the thing. I know a lot of people are talking about sliding and this and that. I kind of worry about sliding because when you slide, you lower the level of your head. And now I think you expose yourself to a whole different array of dangers there. Because all you need is a forearm to the side of your skull, and you're out in concussion protocol. He's so tall, I would almost rather have him stay up and just run out of bounds than slide. Unless he's got plenty of room to give himself up and slide on the play, I don't want him sliding into second base with somebody ready to take his block off.
And I'll tell you this.
And I realize it would be a penalty, but sometimes that doesn't matter to defenders.
I believe yesterday was a little bit of an elevated quarterback run scheme than normal. I don't believe they're going to go through the regular season and have him deliberately run the football 9 times or 6 times or whatever it was. Yeah. I think yesterday was an elevated count in the quarterback run game because there were a bunch of called runs. And I don't really count, you know, not even to count quarterback sneaks. I'm talking about, you know, tucking it and running. And the quarterback, the read draw, the quarterback read kind of runs as well. I think there were more of those in this particular game plan. The quarterback, you know, the rollout and the touchdown that he ran for was a rollout, which is usually a safe bet. But also there were a couple of times we tucked it and ran, and I thought for the most part he did a nice job of running out of bounds. Yeah. He did it early on in the first half and got a third or a second and 12 and stepped out of bounds and didn't get hit doing it. It was a huge plus for that team. So I thought he did a really nice job with his game yesterday when he, you know, hung on to the football. He picked his spots pretty well, but he did take some hits.
Yeah.
But for the most part, he tries to avoid them. But I'm with you, Brownie. I think he does need to do a better job of avoiding the hits, getting out of bounds. But I also think this game was about as much danger as he's going to be in on quarterback runs for the whole year. I don't think they're going to have him run 12 times a game.
Let's quickly go to Matt in Williamsville before the break here. Matt, what do you have for us?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Thanks for having me on. I watched the game yesterday with my 82-year-old grandfather. Socially distant, of course, but really enjoyed the game. I think you guys already answered my question, so I was going to ask if you could help me with a little dilemma I was having during the game yesterday.
Okay.
So yesterday I was watching, Bills were up 21-0, you know, everything was going great. And then I go on Snapchat and I see that my sister put my signed Tremaine Edmonds jersey on my dog and was taking videos of it. So I take my jersey collection very seriously.
This
and
is not good.
Well, yeah, so like what do you guys think? Because I was about to yell and scream at her, but she had a friend with her, so I couldn't do that. So I don't know. You know, what you guys think I should do about it.
Yeah, this is an interesting dilemma that you have here, Matt. And Steve and I are probably at some point this season going to be addressing some relationship-type issues around football season and the sacred nature that people take their football viewing habits into account for. And this is not a significant other relationship. This is a sibling relationship, but still interesting one. I've got an issue with dog hair on my coveted Tremaine Edmonds signed jersey. This is not okay, especially without asking permission, Steve. I don't know where you are.
I'm with you. You've got a beef. I think you've got a beef. She needs to hear about it. It's not just a jersey. It's not just a T-shirt. It's a signed jersey.
Yeah. There's value there.
There's value there.
And you got the Pomeranian wearing the thing,
right,
prancing around the house for the benefit of her social media account.
I don't know that the – yeah. What kind of dog is it?
It's a Portuguese water dog. So my grandmother
he's big.
Took her side. So my grandmother took her side, and I told my grandmother, I was like, how would you feel if Papa's signed Daryl Talley jersey or Steve Tasker jersey was on your dog? Like, it's ridiculous.
And what did she say to that?
She said, oh, it's fine. It's just a jersey. I was like, no, it's not. I got it signed by Tremaine at the Bills practice they had at the stadium last year, and Tremaine's one of my favorite players, and I think they could have damaged the jersey. So
let me just tell you this. When she says, hey, it's just a jersey, the quintessential comeback for that is it's just your social media account.
Yeah, that's the response there. Not only that, you're taking some measure of risk with your four-legged friend wearing the jersey. And, you know, we're talking about
a Portuguese water dog is
not a little dog.
If he needs
a bathroom break, we could have a whole different issue. You know, we don't need him soiling the jersey.
I'm totally with you.
This is a problem.
I think it's a real problem.
I'm with you, Matt.
First of all, Matt,
this is an issue.
From now on, the jersey goes under lock and key, and you don't, that's a no-no. And the Portuguese water dog is not a small dog. They're big.
And let's let the record show the dog is not at fault either. This is strictly a sister issue, and it needs to be rectified. So,
your
Matt,
sister,
we are with you.
Matt, how old is your sister?
Nah, he's already gone.
Yeah, if his sister is a millennial, you kind of get the, you know.
All right.
She's old enough right? I mean, come on.
We are late for the break. But, hey, you got problems like this, feel free to call them in. Steve and I are here to help you sort through these things.
If you're in the football doghouse, or if somebody you know is in your football doghouse, give us a call. We'll help out.
Yeah, we're happy to help you out. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, more of your calls. We'll also get into some other things that we wanted to cover. And then we also have Maddie Glab at the top of the hour as she'll be handing out her Maddie Awards from week one, the win over the Jets. Coming back soon here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Takes the snap, fakes the handoff, rolls to his left, going to keep it himself. Race to the end zone, he is in! Touchdown, Buffalo! Josh Allen, first touchdown of the year. He had 9 rushing touchdowns last year. He's got his first one on the board.
That's the Hunt Red Zone play of the game. Visit huntrealestate.com to score on all your real estate needs. We also want to let you know that a good friend of yours, one Thurman Thomas and Pepsi, have teamed up this Bills season to surprise a few lucky fans with an unbelievable home tailgate experience. Head to madeforbillswatching.com for your chance to score a visit from the Wall of Famer / Hall of Famer number 34. The website is madeforbillswatching.com. Enter for your chance to have a very special home tailgate experience.
Thurman Thomas.
Steve, we are, almost 2 hours into the show here, and we have not gotten to the tweet sheet where we were asking fans, what is your biggest takeaway from the Bills' win over the Jets? And we did tweet it out at the beginning of the show, but we have not gotten to it yet. And the first one from, of all people, is Steve.
Somebody, some other guy named Steve.
Yeah, he says, and the tweet sheet is brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. Steve says, the biggest takeaway for me was how solid we looked most of the day with the limited offseason. Were there mistakes? Yes, but overall a really solid day. One thing that bothers me is the number of hamstring injuries with the Bills, and across the entire NFL there have been a lot. There have.
I noticed it. Well, they went in with Vernon Butler had a hamstring before they went in. Now Matt Milano's got a problem with his. They've got
Josh Norman.
Josh Norman's
on IR with a hamstring. Levi Wallace coming back from a hamstring.
It's been rampant on the Bills. It's been the one thing that's been a little bit of an issue coming out of training camp, and I think the Bills aren't alone in that. Other teams have suffered it with it as well. Mike Evans in Tampa Bay was question mark. It's just all over the league.
Kenny Golladay, I think, the receiver for the Lions.
It's all over the league, and it is something – it says something about the ability of teams and players and individuals and organizations – to figure out how not to have that happen when you come off a long layoff where you don't have a preseason games, you don't have a way to go live. The intensity of your preparation can never match the intensity of what you're going to be actually doing on Sunday. Football is one of those sports where you just can't do that. And that has always been an issue. When you turn it up all the way, you get soft tissue and you get pulled muscles. And it's always been a problem. And this year it seems like that is – It's higher on the list than it is most years.
From Tom on the tweet sheet, positive, Josh Allen completed almost 72% of his throws on 40-plus attempts. Great scheme and use of personnel. Negative, O-line run blocking was not good. Yeah, it's a fair assessment. I mean, it was tough to find creases and holes against what was a top-two run defense unit last year. They did have some changes, but they are still very good. I would expect the Jets to finish top 10 in run defense. They're still a good front, although their linebacking core is even thinner than what the Bills are looking at right now, potentially with their injuries.
Yeah, you're right. They didn't run the ball well yesterday. Give credit to the Jets in some way, shape, or form. They did a nice job there. They continued from where they left off last year. The Bills had to find a different way to move the football, and they did. But I don't really remember them attempting to run it a lot. If you look at the game stats, Josh Allen had 14 rushes, and a lot of those were on dropbacks. Singletary had 9. Zach Moss had 9. That's 2 per quarter, right? So a little over 2 per quarter. So it's they didn't try to run the football all that much.
And when they did, they didn't have a whole lot of success.
They did not.
Because Moss and Singletary combined, 18 carries, 41 yards. That's 2.2 and change per rush.
If you take out the 2 long runs they had.
The longest run they had was 8 yards.
It was 23 yards rushing.
Yeesh.
On what, 16 carries.
So that's going to be in need of some improvement. You'd expect them to work on that this week to be a little bit better balanced, because this week the matchups aren't quite as favorable in the passing game, knowing Xavien Howard and Byron Jones, who they spent a ton of money on to land in free agency from Dallas, are the top 2 corners there in Miami. Those guys can cover. Maybe not perfectly, but they can cover a whole lot better than what the Jets were putting out there on the field yesterday. So
it'll be interesting.
There will have to be a shift in approach and focus this week.
It'll be interesting to see what Brian Daboll thinks that his guys can get done against those 2 guys and how deep their cornerback roster goes.
Yeah. All right. Top of the hour. We have to take a break. We got a sports update. And then when we return, we'll have one Matty Glab joining us for the Matty Awards for week 1's performances. We'll see who are nominated, who are award winners. There will probably be plenty to hand out after yesterday's performance by the Bills in their 10-point win over the Jets. Back in a moment here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.